fan.
25:17. The path of the righteous man is beset on all sides by the inequities of the selfish and the tyranny of evil men. Blessed is he who in the name of charity and goodwill shepherds the weak through the valley of darkness, for he is truly his brother's keeper and the finder of lost children. And I will strike down upon thee with great vengeance and furious anger those who attempt to poison and destroy my brothers. And you will know my name is the Lord when I lay my vengeance upon thee.
III has not appeared on Sunday sermons very often. He's technically not scheduled to appear today, but we're going to have to call him out. Good morning. It's Sunday Sermons, two-hour edition of the program. Barrero and Brianne with you till 11 o'clock. Do we have an official read on whether there's a cake show today? Do we know?
I would be just as surprised as you were if Garth was here.
So apparently not. He's playing out. He's milking one of the longest vacations in Guardsy history. I'm assuming he'll be back tomorrow for Bumper to Bumper. So we're here till 11 o'clock. And man, oh man, it must be an... I've been in Lavelle's position. Big time, major metropolitan newspaper columnist. And you know, part of the job is you put yourself out there a little bit. You take stances. Or is it stands? Or is it both? And occasionally, you come off courageous. Other times, you come off, well, kind of silly. There's even times when you feel like you perhaps owe the readership an apology. Today's Lavelle E. Neal III column, page 2, Star Tribune sports section, is all about something we've discussed early and often on this program over the years, the sports abyss, as it pertains to the Minnesota sports scene. He's, of course, riffing on the fact that Tampa Bay won a third title that's now over the course of a calendar year. Two Stanley Cup crowns and the Tampa Bay Bucks with Tom Brady winning the Super Bowl. And he's saying, what about us? We don't get close anymore in anything, let alone entertaining thoughts of winning a championship. He does acknowledge, briefly, the Minnesota Lynx and the fact that they seem to be primed to make a playoff run. Hottest team in hockey, right? Well, I guess it'd be basketball right now. He throws that in. But unless I missed it, and if I did, I apologize to him, not a word about the Minnesota Vixen. According to Dan Winnesota, and he's impeccable as a source, because I really couldn't find it anyplace else, because no one's bothering to cover it, your Minnesota Vixen have advanced to the WFA football championship round, the title game, with an emotional 33-22 victory over something called the Cali War. That must be Cali, short for California. The California War? Is that the moniker? WFA football. Brianne, see if you can get any more information on it. I looked. I couldn't. I saw the league has a Facebook page, but I don't have a Facebook account, so I couldn't get much detail in there. And all I could find there was the same thing, that they'd won on, I believe, Saturday, yesterday, here, to advance. One step away from bringing to Minnesota a world championship in something called the WFA. If you are a great WFA mind, if you are a great Vixen mind, email the Bradshaw and Brian inbox. It's been rebooted for the start of today's show. Booth, B-O-O-T-H, at KFAN.com. Must be tough to have that kind of egg on your face. On the verge. Here we are on the verge. Well, at least knowing we've advanced to the title round with a good opportunity, one would assume, to win the championship. And we got headlines from Lavelle about it being the sports abyss. I intend to dive deep into Vixen football during the upcoming week. I'm assuming the championship game is next week. I don't know. Maybe like with the Super Bowl, they like a two-week gap between the conference title round and the championship round, if they have such a thing as a conference title round. I don't know that they do. But that helps historically for the Super Bowl. That was the grand plan was, let's build up over 2 weeks the grand finale. Maybe we do the same. I'm not exactly sure. But congratulations to the Vixen. 33-22 victory over something called the Cali War. Further proof that for those who want to say it's the sports abyss, nothing to get excited about, Twins are a mess, notwithstanding a three straight victories over the almost as bad Detroit Tigers, chance to go for the brooms today, that we don't really have much until training camp begins. Hockey team, well, playoff run long over. Basketball team, not in the playoffs. We don't need to go through the list. And we know, as I said, what the situation is regarding your Minnesota Twins, who still figure to be and should be in a trade mode, even if they do manage to sweep the Detroit Tigers later today. Booth at KFAN.com, Bradshaw and Brian inbox. No guests are scheduled today unless Lavelle at some point wants to call in and defend himself, or maybe even fall on the sword and admit that regardless of what kind of deadline he had for the Sunday column, he should have been monitoring the Vixen and what they might be indeed capable of doing. What else will we be talking about today? Well, we will be talking about what is classified as one of the greatest upsets in USA men's basketball Olympic history, even if the game technically counts not a whit, will have, to that extent, zero impact on whether the USA men's Olympic basketball team is able to get the gold medal in Tokyo in just a few weeks. But we'll still talk about it because the basketball world has been rocked by it. It is juicy. There are several layers to it, I've learned. And is it possible that even though Coach K is not coaching the team, that he is directly responsible for Team USA losing an exhibition game in preparation for the Tokyo Olympics? More details on that coming up. In addition, what continues to plague baseball more than any other single quality? We'll discuss it, and we will examine details of a game, a single game, that perhaps best distills what at the most fundamental level continues to plague the summer game, as I think it was it Roger Angel who first called it that? Famed baseball writer, I'm not sure. Generally on sermons, we try to stay within the parameters of the toy department. We make exceptions from time to time. We're going to make another exception today. I would put it under the classification of it's prime done as a society material. It has, well, a former guest of the Bumper to Bumper show, Dan Abrams, puzzled. And his being puzzled made me be puzzled, certainly caught my attention, and perhaps we can come to some sort of better understanding of the frustrations revealed in this particular story. It involves what are classified as the Generation Z folks. Are you Generation Z, Brianne?
I'm the tail end of millennial, I guess. So okay. These kids are much younger than
so
me.
Generation Z is what? Do we know technically what that is?
I think about maybe after 95, kind of okay. In between.
So that's pretty young, yeah. Obviously.
Zoomers. They
younger call than me, and you say even perhaps younger than you.
Yes.
All right. Well, we'll get to they confound the rest of us from time to time. They've done so again in a New York Times story that I think we should definitely discuss, even if technically speaking it's outside the toy department. Plus, we have to get to, before we're done, a rather troubling story. Speaking of Major League Baseball, All-Star game scheduled for Denver, and a rather troubling story coming off really technically the A section, which we need to at least discuss or bring to your attention if you're not aware of it. So, a full plate on a two-hour edition of Sunday Sermons today, as I mentioned. Bradshaw and Brian inbox is open. Booth at KFAN.com. We've got some Vixen-related emails coming in as we speak. And looking forward to more details emerging on that. Was this considered a rebuilding year for the Vixen? Were they primed from the start as a preseason favorite to make a run? And when you make a run for the, what did I call it? The WFA title, how many games do you have to win? How many teams are even in the league at this point? We'll try to get answers to several of those questions. We will mix in emails, and we'll be glad to entertain phone calls on a Sunday morning. 800-320-5326 or 651-989-5326 as well. Also, perhaps we can find if Vegas odds have been posted on whether we, being the Vixen, are underdogs in the title game or favorites. I think we're playing the defending champions. I believe we're playing the defending champions, and if I'm not mistaken, they're called the Boston Renegades. The Boston Renegades. I assume Vegas has a line on everything, don't they? They have odds on pretty much everything. My guess is we're going to be an underdog, but maybe that's a good thing. Certainly didn't seem to bother the Nigeria men's Olympic basketball team. We'll give you details on what that's all about when
on the Fan.
Sunday Sermons is brought to you by JTR Roofing.
I'm on the WFA website. And I'm looking at the standings. I'm assuming these must be regular season standings. I don't know how it works in this league. And at the top, here's what's interesting. The Boston Renegades are in first place, listed in first place with a record of 6-0. This doesn't make a lot of sense to me. In second place, listed the DC Divas with a record of 1-4. Then in third place, the Minnesota Vixen with a record of 7-0. Are we missing something here, or did they forget to update the standings? It would seem hard to believe that the Divas should be in second place with a record of 1-4, and we should be in third, 7-0. Are we undefeated? Are the Renegades undefeated? Because that would mean something's got to give. Irresistible force, immovable object. Vixen, if you're just joining us, advanced to the championship round of this particular football league with a victory yesterday. I believe in Edina. We'll double check the location there. And we're trying to piece together as much information as we can on the Vixen. A couple people have done a scouting report for us regarding the Renegades. They advanced to the championship round for the second consecutive year with a 55-3 victory, according to Sweeney's guy. How much any of this is true, we have no idea, because none of this is a team that gets no coverage. Maybe that'll change now. I don't know. But the Renegades are a legitimate opponent. Jacob writes, thanks for mentioning the Vixen on your show this morning. My wife played for the Vixen for 6 years and has coached since. The Vixen have a tremendous history of perseverance and success the past several years and are poised to be champions this year. My wife, Emily Sundberg, would be happy to discuss any Vixen-related info with you. There's a phone number there I don't want to list over the air, so we'll see what we can do about maybe getting a little bit, maybe getting a guest, if not today, during the week, a Vixen-related guest or two. Somebody else with a little more information. Oh, Dan Winnesota's got a lead for us. Vixen announcer guy tells me the championship is, yeah, July 24th. So they're doing the old, that they're following the Super Bowl NFL tradition of, we're going to build things up for 2 weeks. We're going to get 2 weeks of coverage, day-to-day coverage of this matchup. To add to the drama, to add another layer to the excitement. Game will be played 2 weeks from yesterday, according to Vixen announcer guy, according to Dan Winnesota, at 5 p.m. in Canton, Ohio. The birthplace of football, Canton, Ohio. So we're going to piece it. We're piecing it together. It's taken some time. But we are absolutely going to piece some things together, and before you know it, we will consider ourselves Vixen aficionados and experts. And I expect somewhere in the next 2 weeks, Lavelle is going to have to write an apology column about the Vixen's chance to give us another title, the thing we say we don't get enough of. Meanwhile, big basketball story right now is not the NBA Finals, which I believe continue today or tonight. I'm assuming tonight. I don't even think we have day games anymore, much to my chagrin when it comes to this championship round. Bucks in desperate need of a victory, down 2-0 to the Phoenix Suns, but nobody in basketball, nobody who pays any attention to basketball, even people who pay just cursory attention to basketball are talking about the NBA Finals. And how this thing might go. They are talking about an exhibition game. A game that technically does not count a whit. Yet, the circumstances of it, the results of it, are stunning people. The U.S. team in Vegas, prepping men's Olympic basketball, NBA players, of course, prepping to head to Japan and to attempt to win the gold medal again. Their coach is Greg Popovich. And last night, he found himself having to explain how, even in an exhibition circumstance, the U.S. team lost to a country that 9 years ago, it beat by 83 points And more recently, 5 years ago, they beat by 44 points. Yet yesterday, the U.S. team lost to Team Nigeria 90-87. The Olympic exhibition opener for both teams. For the record, if you care at all about the Minnesota Timberwolves, you can take pride in this victory because one of the starters for the Nigeria basketball team is one of ours, Josh Okogie. Now, if you look at his box score, it didn't seem as if he was front and center to the victory, but he started. I think he was 2 for 7 from the floor, had something like 3 rebounds, did have 4 assists, I believe. But he's on the club. He's one of, I believe, 5 or 6 NBA players or players with NBA experience on the team. But we've got everybody. Well, we don't have everybody because I think 3 of the players who are playing in the NBA Finals are going to join the club in Tokyo. But we still got a lot. We got Kevin Durant. We got Damian Lillard. We got Bradley Beal. Jason Tatum. Bam Adebayo. Draymond Green. And yet, we got shocked. 90-87. Nigeria finished, I believe, with 20 made three-point shots. 20 made three-point shots. And we had a lot of people shoot poorly. And so people are trying to figure out, what the hell does this mean? Are we as vulnerable as that appears? How even in an exhibition format does that happen? Greg Popovich, in a very un-Popovich-like moment, lamenting that everybody expects us to win every game, and that puts some pressure on you. That didn't sound like Pop. Pop also saying, well, maybe this is the best thing that ever happened to us. The old, maybe it gets the attention of the players. Other people who witnessed the game, watched it start to finish, which I did not, said they don't think it's that easy. They don't even think necessarily that the U.S. overlooked Nigeria. They thought Nigeria just took it to us. And remember, we've not been quite as dominant as we'd like to think internationally. Now, we are in the Olympics. In the Olympics, in fact, we have a 25-game winning streak. And for the record, we're now 54-3 in exhibition games since 1992. But more recently, we have in international play, World Cup play, we've struggled a little bit. Team USA lost 4 games, 2 exhibition matches in 2019. This one and twice in the 2019 World Cup to France and Serbia. So even internationally, we've shown some vulnerability lately. Could all of it be the fault of Coach K? Could this be one of the most historic examples of a team very calmly and coolly registering a result and saying, someday, we are going to remember this, and we're going to exact our revenge. I'm looking at a piece from Adrian Wojnarowski, Aug 2, 2012, back when he was Yahoo guy. A lot of water under the bridge since then. Dateline London, Olympics. After the United States was done delivering the most devastating defeat in the history of Olympic basketball, a 156-73 obliteration of Nigeria, U.S. coach Mike Krzyzewski sniffed over the suggestion that the Americans had gone too far in an 83-point humiliation of a fledgling African program. Yes, Coach K and the U.S. team was accused of the proverbial dreaded running up the score. Records tumbled in stunning and spectacular fashion. A surreal 29 Team USA three-pointers dropping into the basket in Thursday's Pool A Olympic tournament game. Carmelo Anthony, 37 points in 14 minutes. 37 points in 14 minutes. No one had ever scored so many points in an Olympic game as a team. And the record for three-pointers had been broken before halftime. Nevertheless, a question in the post-game news conference about the U.S. running up the score stiffened Coach K, inspiring him to respond with marked defiance. We didn't play LeBron and Kobe in the second half, and with Carmelo shooting like that, we benched him. We didn't take any fast breaks in the fourth quarter. We played all zone. You have to take a shot every 24 seconds, and the shots we took happened to be hit. He also then pointed to the Nigerian coach at the time, said, Coach would think it humiliating if we didn't play hard. Is it possible those in charge of the Nigerian team said, we'll file this away. Might take us a while. Might take us, in fact, a decade. We're going to file it away. We're going to get better. We're going to improve ourselves. And we're going to lie in wait. And sooner or later, we are going to make you pay for exactly what you did running up the score in the London Olympics the summer of 2012. At the very least, I will say that the beauty of this is it will create a little bit more intrigue and drama for the U.S. team heading into Tokyo. I'm not saying they planned it this way, that they wanted to lose. I think Durant was 4-for-17 from the floor. A couple other players did not shoot very well either. But it will at least make it a bit more interesting for folks as well. So, Mike Brown, for the record, former NBA head coach and these days an assistant with the Golden State Warriors, is the coach. He's taken on the assignment of building that program, and it looks like they are making some significant strides. So there you have it. Further evidence that sooner or later, running up the score will bite you in the rear end. Nationally, perhaps even internationally as well. More info on the Women's Football Alliance and the Vixen coming in. We'll give you some more details on that. We'll also discuss two baseball stories. Well, really, one is a baseball story that I think sort of captures the state of the game. And the other is a very troubling A-section story pertaining to the upcoming All-Star Game. In fact, I think the Home Run Derby is tomorrow night. Was a world-class disaster averted by alert hotel personnel and law enforcement? We'll give you details on that.
On the Fan.
Love and happiness. Wait a minute. Something.
Well, it was inevitable. The word would circulate, and it would get eventually to Lavelle E. Neal III. It's got to be a daunting day, as I said, for any columnist who finds himself or herself in a position where they must, well, kind of come to terms with their own unwillingness to acknowledge greatness, to ignore that greatness in attempting to make a certain point, for example, about this sports market and its current struggles. Lavelle is on the Connecticut Water Systems hotline as we speak. See if I can get the mouse to cooperate with me and get you on there. There we go. Lavelle, are you embarrassed at all? Do you feel like you owe anybody an apology?
Well, have the Vixen won a title yet?
Well, no, but they advanced to the title game. I mean, that has to. I mean, part of your point was we don't even make runs, let alone get to the title round.
Well, you know, call me when you're. Don't call me when you're in my town. Call me when you're on my block. You know, get it done here. So are they playing Boston in the championship or who?
We're playing the Renegades, who I think...
The Boston Renegades.
They're the defending champions in Division I. I'm learning more about this league Every day, every moment. The WFA, it's considered the largest 11-on-11 women's tackle football league in the world. We are there. I think there are four divisions, and we are in Division One. There are going to be like four title round games played in Canton, Ohio. We're in the big one. We're in Division One, taking on the defending champion Renegades, who edged their last opponent, I think, 56-3.
Is there television coverage of this?
It's a good question. There should be. Let's put it this way. There's TV coverage given the streaming capabilities now of everything. I mean, I can watch my sister's high school basketball team, Barrington, sitting in my Barca here, a regular season game, postseason game, whatever the case may be. So if that is true, please tell me there's a place that people now that we're building this up, because it's now 2 weeks from yesterday, will have a chance to take a look and see if indeed the Vixen can get it done.
Well, wait a minute. Is this Barrington or Barrington Hills?
Well, it's the same. Well, one and the same, really. Barrington Hills is right next to Barrington.
Someone who's been born in Chicago knows that Barrington is an elite suburb.
It is.
all the beautiful people live in Barrington. Okay.
There, as Common would say, there's that. Yeah.
They can actually fund their own television.
You think they might have their own money to do their own network?
Yeah.
Yeah, you might be right about that. That's a very good point. I just want you aware of this. I don't want you to forget about them, because I have to admit I'd forgotten about them. And you're right. Technically, they haven't won it. And if it's about winning titles, if that's the expectation, then, you know, get back to me when you win it. But now we have 2 weeks to build it up, a la the Super Bowl, where there's usually a two-week gap between the title round games, conference title round games, and the big one. We have 2 weeks of coverage, and I think you're obligated to be a part of it.
Well, maybe. I have opened myself up for criticism now that I've written this column. I've gotten some interesting emails. Although the first email came in last night, and the guy writes, "I agree with you, but because you didn't vote for Pedro Martinez for MVP, you have no credibility."
They still can't let it go, can they?
They probably can.
That's too good. That is too good. You'll never live it down.
No.
At least in some people's minds. Yeah, it's unbelievable. It's absolutely amazing.
Yeah, that's the niche I've carved off for myself in history.
That's okay. That's okay. Here's the thing. Not a subject I intended to explore today, but it's a good reminder, because whatever people think of the decision you made, okay, and I'll listen to all opinions on it, okay? It's your vote. And this is the part about many of your fellow voters today, especially the youngsters, that I don't get. Lovell can no longer accept that it's your vote. And so the idea again, like when a player doesn't get in unanimously, people lose their minds, and I don't even know why. And it's like, well, it doesn't matter if it's somebody's vote. It may be strategy. There may be a lot of reasons to do it. Bottom line is, there are people who think that that folks who vote like you did in that situation, or don't vote for somebody who should be first ballot, should lose their vote entirely, which makes no sense to me.
I know. We're at the point now is because if I have a difference of opinion than you do, you're automatically wrong, and I'm automatically right.
Not only are you automatically wrong, Lovell, you're not allowed to have the opinion or the vote. It should be taken away from you.
I know. What has there been a unanimous vote for the Hall of Fame? Ricky Henderson only got like 95% of the vote. Oh, my God, he was the greatest leadoff hitter in the history of baseball. You know, and people, what was the year? Shaq got like what? One person left Shaq off his ballot.
Right.
Was that like Fred Hickman or something like that?
I don't remember. I vaguely remember. I know somebody did. I don't know if it was him or not. Yeah. I just.
And the witch hunt is still out for him over there.
Yeah. People lose their minds. It's very strange.
This is America. It's supposed to be allowed to. This is supposed to be a country of freedom of expression.
I thought
here,
so.
You know.
I thought so.
As long as it's not, you know, illegal or violent or, or offensive.
Correct.
You have a right to your opinion.
I'd like to think that's true.
We've lost the ability to have conversations. All we do is have arguments.
That's it. That's pretty much. And by the way, I actually can live with the arguments. What I can't live with is being told you're not allowed to have that place in the argument. That's the part that I that just drives me. Arguments are part of certainly part of sports. Right. And debates about whether you should have voted for, the distinction that you made in terms of this being a pitcher, whatever. I mean, those arguments are out there, but it's the idea is almost like you were not even allowed to have that particular point of view. It's very strange to me. It's weird because it's about sports, but it's actually become about everything. And that's why when people say, well, that's just a sports argument, who cares? It's really part of the sensibility that is now, I think, plaguing us across the board, no matter what the subject, even more important ones.
Yeah, think about that in relation to politics and
correct.
How people vote for offices this right now. So it's crazy, man.
But, so
go Vixen. You know, if they can get this done, maybe I will be forced to write a column about a Minnesota champion because we don't have those very often.
No, we don't. We definitely don't. And isn't it ironic that it is again a women's team getting it done for us? That's what the Lynx do. And even like I said, you can say, well, win it and get back to me, but what men's team has gotten as far as the championship game in recent memory? It hasn't happened.
Not in professional ranks. I mean, Gopher Hockey won the championship.
That's true.
The old Minnesota Thunder won the outdoor championship like 20 years ago.
They did?
Yeah, Paul Allen and I, PA and I actually drove up to Blaine because they were playing the Rochester Raging Rhinos.
Whoa.
For the title. And I think Amos McGee was still playing. Amos is with Minnesota United now.
I don't even remember this.
Yeah, because I knew the owners of the Rochester team because they used to own the indoor team in Kansas City when I worked there. So, we rode up in Paul Allen's broken down pickup truck. No, it was the Astro van. His pickup truck was still being repaired.
Really?
He had the loaner. He had a Chevy Astro van for a loaner. And we rode up to play to watch the Thunder play Rochester.
And they won.
But that's it, though. Yeah,
that's
they
it.
They got it done.
Yeah, you're right. We got to mention the hockey team. We got to mention college sports count, although pro is a whole other issue.
About a span of 20-something years.
I know.
That this has occurred. And you know, Boston had a run, was it 07, 08, when everybody won? Like the Bruins, the Patriots, the Red Sox broke the curse. You know, everybody won there. As I point out in my column, Tampa Bay, my goodness, they had one sports team in 1991 when the Twins won.
That's right.
One. And now, you know, the Rays go to the World Series. The hockey team's won twice in the last calendar year. And Brady's got it done.
By the way, if you get online, I talked about this. Somebody sent this to me either Thursday or Friday. There's an interesting graphic you can find online that somebody's put together about winning championship excellence in cities in which Tom Brady happened to be living at the same time. Goes all the way back to, have you seen it? To his time in obviously Northern California because he grew up in the San Francisco area, and then obviously to Michigan. To play at the University of Michigan, but what then the Detroit teams did then, and then clearly from there to New England and to Tampa. Basically, teams win championships, even in other sports, when Tom Brady is living in that town. It's stunning.
I was with a guy yesterday. We were watching yesterday afternoon. I was at a restaurant down the street from my house, and we were watching something. The guy showed me the chart and brought up the fact that Brady used to come here to visit relatives. And he was like, he was about 14. Why couldn't he just stay for like a little bit longer and we could have won a championship or something? I was like, well, he was 14 at the time or 14. Whatever he was.
That's exactly right. Thanks for checking in. I think you got to at least put them on your radar screen. That's all I'm asking. Because I can't be a fool. It wasn't like I was thinking a lot of. We didn't preview the semifinal game. We did not have it on our screen either. But now that they're here, on the verge of a football immortality, I think we at least have to give them an acknowledgement.
Yeah, I got a feeling I'm going to hear about this.
For sure, now especially.
Yeah, this is going to be an interesting week.
Thanks, Lava.
All right, take it easy.
Appreciate that. I'd have kept Lava on longer, but look who's called in. It's Vixen announcer guy. Brian Sweeney is his name. He's the color commentator for Road, and of course he's public address announcer for home Vixen games as well. I have your bio correct, right? Dan Winnesota passed it along to me. Is that about accurate?
That's about as accurate as Dan Wensoda can ever be.
Okay, that's good. All right, let me. Can you do this for me? Can we get a quick break in, and then I want to come back, and I want to give you the opportunity to give us a Minnesota Vixen primer about how we got here, what our chances are to pull off the monumental upset, and what you can tell us about the development of the league. Can we do that?
Yes.
It's a beautiful thing. We'll put Brian Sweeney back on hold. We got a full hour yet to go. A couple of other subjects, baseball related, which I teased before Lavel made his cold call in. I promise you we'll get to that in the 10 o'clock.
The Fan.
You have meddled with the primal forces of nature. And you will atone.
For those of you who don't remember, the voice you heard on that sounder that historically or traditionally has started hour number two of sermons was that of the late, great Ned Beatty, who we oded just a few weeks ago when it was announced that he had passed away. He has Minnesota connections as well. As we welcome you back to hour number two of Sunday Sermons, we spent a lot of the first hour of the show talking about the Minnesota Vixen Women's Professional Football Tackle Football League team advancing to the championship round. Now a game we're learning will be played in 2 weeks, 2 weeks from yesterday, in Canton, Ohio. And the bat signal went out, and Brian Sweeney, who is got all sorts of announcing duties, color commentator for road and public address announcer for home games for the Vixen, called in to give us a little bit more information on this run and the cosmic significance of it all. Thanks for holding through the break. Give us a little bit, if you would, first, about any juicy or interesting details surrounding the 33-22 victory over, I think they're called the Cali War, yesterday. Where that was played, highlights, lowlights, etc.
Yeah, thanks. Well, the Cali War, obviously, you know, as their name states, comes from the state of California, and this was probably one of the most exciting Minnesota Vixen games that I've had an opportunity to announce in my tenure with the team, which started back in 2015. The 33-22, this was the only game in the entire season where there was a moment of the game where the Minnesota Vixen actually trailed. And that happened in the second quarter when Caliu had a 1-point lead on us. But, yeah, the Minnesota Vixen did what they did do best. They kept handing the ball off to Grace Cooper. They had the deep passes down the field to Segula, and Barber, and they pulled out the win in the same way that they've done all season long. In fact, this was their eighth game of the year if you count regular season and playoffs, and they've managed to score a touchdown on the opening drive every game this season.
Every game. So they got that every opening game drive scripted very well. So we're undefeated at this point?
Correct. We are undefeated this season. It's not the first time that they've gone undefeated into a championship weekend. They did that back in 2016 as well, where the championship was with a different league, but they ended up playing in North Carolina that season and lost the national championship.
So now we prepare for the Renegades in Canton 2 weeks from yesterday, and they're the defending champions, I believe. At least that's what I've been told, and they're very good. So are we going to be... The odds makers, will they have us underdogs, heavy underdogs? What kind of challenge do we have against the Renegades?
You know, it's definitely going to be the greatest challenge the Vixen have ever seen. The Renegades have not lost a game since 2018. Now, granted, 2020, there was no season.
Right.
COVID canceled it like it did for so many other things. But the Renegades are back-to-back national champions. They won in Atlanta, Georgia in 2018, and then they won in Boulder, Colorado in 2019. So this year, though, playing at the Tom Benson Hall of Fame Stadium in Canton, Ohio, could be the year that the Renegades go down. I know there's plenty of other teams around the league that are in Minnesota Vixen's corner.
All right, so tell me a little bit about the league as I understand it, there are four divisions, and we're in Division One. Does that mean in terms of quality of play? Is it set up geographically? What do the divisions mean in the WFA?
Well, there's actually only three divisions.
Three.
Division One, Two, and Three.
Okay.
And it's not so much quality of play as it is the ability to field a larger roster.
Okay.
A lot of the smaller teams, you have players that are playing both on the offense and defensive side of the ball and going out there for special teams. The Minnesota Vixen, Boston Renegades, Cali War, Houston Energy, Houston's Division Two, but Tampa Bay Inferno, teams like that. They're fortunate enough to live in areas where they are able to roster full-size teams. I mean, Minnesota Vixen dress over 50 players for every game. So they're able to have players that play specifically on special teams or specifically offense, specifically defense. And that's one reason that they've been able to be around since 1999 when the team was founded, is that continuously year in and year out, they have a number of players come to their tryouts, which happen every fall in October, and they're able to field both larger teams. So the Division II and Division III teams, you know, their goals, of course, is to get a good business model in place so that they can move up to Division I.
Where do we play our home games?
Our home games this year, with the exception of playoffs, were played at Concordia St. Paul Seafoam Stadium.
Okay.
That stadium was booked for other things when the playoffs rolled around. So the playoff game on the 26th of June and last night's game were both played at Cullman Field in Edina.
Edina, that's what I thought. I thought the most recent ones were in Edina. Who, Brian, would you say is our best player? Or is that a loaded? Is that a loaded question for you?
It's a loaded question because I, as the public address announcer for a number of years and stuff, you know, I have a lot of friends on the team too.
All right, well, you can pick more than one. You can give us a couple.
Sure. If I'm going to look at running backs, I mean, it's going to strictly be Grace Cooper. She is 4 yards shy of 1,400 yards on the ground this season right now. You have Sam Barber and Kaya Segula, which are amazing receivers. You have Cynthia Red Bryant, who's been on the team since 1999 as a nose tackle, and she will bust through that offensive line on the other team and just level people, and she's always fun to watch. So, I mean, you can Phil Winton, they are an amazing player as well, able to break up runs, able to knock down passes. And then this year we've had some surprising players as well. I mean, Britta Clark last night probably had one of the most amazing games I've ever seen her have. And Amy Mugas this year, who's been on the team for quite a while, has got a number of interceptions this year, and one of them even ran back for a touchdown.
Would you classify, in terms of the offensive style, are we throwback? I mean, it sounds like we run a lot. Are we more like a little bit of a throwback? Or what's the style of the league in terms of how much passing is done compared to running?
You know, like Boston's game last night, they scored touchdowns. Seven of their nine touchdowns last night were all on the ground.
Really?
In the air.
In the air. Okay.
Whereas most teams, their touchdowns are on the ground. They play NCAA rules, with the only exception being a slightly smaller football.
Okay.
But otherwise, you know, they're playing college, you know, Division I, II, and III rules, and these women are out there doing everything they can on every game.
So now you get 2 weeks to build this thing up for Canton, correct?
Yes, 2 weeks to build this up. I'm fortunate enough that for the last three seasons, I actually do the play-by-play coverage for the broadcast for the national championship game. So my ticket to Canton was purchased a couple months ago.
Nice.
But it's nice to know that the team will be joining me there.
So for people who do want to watch this thing, is it going to be streamed? Is there a network that's going to carry it? Is there some, you know, what do you suggest to people who are now curious?
If people have DirecTV, it's going to be on Next Level Sports, which is channel 623.
623. Okay, I happen to have DirecTV. Yep. I'll remember that. Good.
Otherwise, they can go to For the Fans HQ on Twitter and Facebook, and there's a number of streaming services that carry them, from Roku to, you know, all those streaming services would have it.
It's a beautiful thing. Well, I appreciate you checking in. We'll maybe try to stay in touch as we get closer to it, and definitely once the game starts or game is played. Is it 5 o'clock Central? Is that our game time, or do we have that?
Yes.
That's it.
5 o'clock central. 5 o'clock central is the time that the kickoff will be from, like I said, Tom Benton Stadium in Canton, Ohio, at the Football Hall of Fame.
And that is July 24, correct?
That is correct.
2 weeks from yesterday. Beautiful. Thanks for checking in, man. We appreciate the you give us some a little bit of the background as well.
Yeah, no problem.
Thanks. We'll put. In fact, we got him back on hold. I think that maybe Breanne's going to get a phone number on him as well. Boothakfn.com is the Bradshaw and Bryant inbox. And also, here, let's take another quick phone call. Multiply faster than a jackrabbit guy apparently went to the game last night, the semifinal game that catapults our local club to the title round, the game that we've just been talking about, the Vixen knocking off Cali War 33-22. Multiply, you were at the ball game last night?
Yes.
What are you? Would you classify yourself as a Vixen fan, or are you just kind of a Johnny come lately who wants to jump on the bandwagon now that we have a chance, perhaps, to win a championship?
Dan. Oh, come on now. Give you some background. One of my sons happens to teach at the same school as Grace Cooper, and he basically called me up and said, "You got to come and watch some. Come and watch." Some of these Vixen games. It's actually pretty, it's good football and whatnot. It's just, it's a fun atmosphere and whatnot. So me and my wife, we went, kind of a family affair. We went up to, the stadium off of Highway 100, and it was a fun atmosphere. It was a beautiful night to be there. I don't know. I think there's about 700 people that actually showed up, and it was pretty entertaining.
And, it sounds like their bread and butter is running the ball. Correct?
Oh, yeah. The running back, Grace Cooper, I think.
Cooper, that's yeah.
My son actually teaches at the same school as she does.
How violent is it? I mean, this is tackle football, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, it was there's some decent hits.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, the passing game, Grace is a fabulous running back. She's, from what I understood, she ran track in college, from what my son told me.
Okay.
And there was some good passing, too. It was, yeah, there's skill out there. There's no doubt about it.
Will you be driving? Will you be making the trip to Canton for the title game?
Well, Dan, if I couldn't make the drive down to Texas to watch my Jackrabbits in the national championship game, that's going to be kind of tough.
Yeah. Well, it's not as far, I wouldn't think. But, yeah, I get your point. It's a hike.
Dan,
yes.
If you go with me,
then you'll go. All right, fair enough. Well, I got DirecTV, so I'll be watching now for sure. Now I got to see this thing finished off. What they have to understand, though, and I hope they do, is that when you clearly they want pub, they want some, yeah. You know, they want to their day in the sun, but that's a two-edged sword. So if they do what the Vikings have done forever and lose, and it sounds like they got to the championship round a few years ago and did lose, we might notice that too. They got to understand that there's two sides to this thing.
Yeah, but you got to get there first.
That's very true. Very true.
Oh, another shout out. They've got some really good food there. I had some loaded French fries that were just outstanding.
Even better. I wish they would have had potato cakes, but that's another story. Thanks for the email or the phone call. I should say that's multiplied faster than Jackrabbit guy. He was there. He saw it as the Vixen get it done against something called the California War, to advance to the championship game in Division I. I had mentioned there were four divisions. There were actually three. We've been corrected on that. And we are in the so-called top division in terms of number of players, et cetera, et cetera. We got some time here in this segment. I teased some baseball stuff that I want to get to when Lavelle called in to try to defend himself. And one of them is troubling. The other one, I think, is in the classification of further indication that the game of baseball needs to fix one thing more than anything else. This is a tweet from a political writer, I think. Here's what he writes. Yankees and Astros played a 1-0 game last night. Neither team made a mid-inning pitching change, nor used a pinch hitter or a pinch runner, yet the game still took 3 hours. Pitch clock now, forget the other Manfred garbage. Now, I don't know any details of the game. Maybe you had really good hitters taking pitchers deep into counts. That's not illegal. That's not something that should be legislated out of the game. That's good baseball. I've never had a problem with that. My problem has been more with stoppages related to batters in and out of the batter's box, adjusting every part of their equipment on them, quite literally in some cases, and pitchers who are constantly wiping their brow in and off the mound, on and off the rubber, et cetera, et cetera. That there was a time when there was an internal clock baseball had, even in a game that's not about a clock, that said, I can't delay as long as I guess you could say the players do today. I have more respect for the audience. And quite frankly, if you're the pitcher, for my own fielders to labor over and over and need the signals from the catcher offered over and over. That's what's changed about the game. And if indeed there wasn't any other reason for why this game should still be 3 hours, then to me, you do have further indication that nothing short of a pitch clock will save baseball on this particular issue. Nothing. You could do stuff about how many hitters you face. You can do stuff about how many pitchers that you are taken in and out of a game. That stuff is fine as far as it goes, but I'll continue to believe that as much as I hate the concept of a pitch clock, because it is contrary to, you could say, the aesthetics of the game, the basis upon which the game was constructed, I would argue that the players themselves, if I'm commissioner, I say to the players, you yourselves have left us with no other option. We did not want to do this. But the idea that we would urge you to be quicker, that we would try to get umpires to urge you to be quicker unofficially, just doesn't work. It's clearly, we've got time and again evidence that that has not worked. And as a result, we are going to put hard and fast in a pitch clock, and we are going to adhere to it, period. If you still need 3 hours to play a 1-0 game in which there are basically no pitching changes made, or at least not done in the middle of an inning, you got a problem. And again, my problem isn't that you have to try to eliminate all 3-hour baseball games or 3.5-hour baseball games. Not at all. Sometimes that's the nature of what takes place. High scoring, whatever. The issue is, on average, to give fans the idea that we acknowledge that you only have so much time, we acknowledge that your attention span is a bit shorter than we would like it to be, so we're going to try, indeed, to, shall we say, in the business, keep things moving a little bit more. When circumstances of the games themselves don't make it impossible for the game to be faster. I've been to many long baseball games and enjoyed them. I mean, depending on the twists and turns, depending on the sequence, that's fine. The issue is, there should be, to balance that, a lot more 2.5-hour ball games, 2-hour and 40-minute ball games. The season goes on for bleeping ever. And the only way you're going to give yourself an honest shot at getting this done is absolutely, in my view, a shot clock. I don't know if it's how much of a battle it is with the union, but I would, if I were as commissioner, I would invoke every advantage I have to force the players to look this in the mirror and to confront them on this and to make them better understand that we're losing too many people. There's another stat indicating the average age of your baseball fan. It's easily the oldest of any of the major professional sports. That doesn't make it a bad game, but it means that if you're trying to regenerate and you're trying to get, like, any business, any sports entity needs to get and nurture younger fans, as in we build generation after generation. And it may be that baseball, the nature of the game, is just not going to appeal to a lot of people who are younger, but I dare say it might a little bit more often, or there might be more people into it if there was a feeling that there's the game's moving. We're not going to have these endless, stupid delays that we've just gotten accustomed to because players have been allowed to get away from it, or away with it, year after year. Liberty.
You're listening to The Fan.
Sometimes the some of the most unspeakable tragedies don't get the attention they deserve because they are prevented from happening before they can become those tragedies. Are we about to talk about another example of that? Hard to say, but the details are a bit troubling. The All-Star Game is slated for Tuesday in Denver, Colorado. And according to several outlets, four individuals were arrested on illegal weapons possession charges at a Denver hotel just two blocks from Coors Field. Denver police Friday night arresting three men and one woman at the Maven Hotel after receiving a tip. More on the tip in a minute. The Denver Police Department also announced that evidence was recovered after search warrants were obtained for two rooms at the hotel and two vehicles were impounded. Local ABC affiliate Denver 7, citing multiple law enforcement sources, reported yesterday that police discovered 16 long guns, body armor, and more than 1,000 rounds of ammunition from an eighth floor hotel room that had a balcony overlooking Denver's downtown area. Police then they list the names of the individuals involved: Richard Platt, Gabriel Rodriguez, Ricardo Rodriguez, all arrested. Also, there's charges of possession of a controlled substance with intent to distribute. Then Kanaluha Sarakawa, also arrested on investigation of possession of a controlled substance with intent to distribute. So, what do we have here? Could this be an utter coincidence, whatever they had in mind, given their circumstance and given their timing and given where they were? Or could this have been potentially an attempt to instigate a Las Vegas-style mass shooting, which you recall took place in 2017, more than 60 concertgoers dead near a Vegas hotel as well. The tip, the alertness of it, is also what fascinates me and what impresses me, because the original question apparently was raised by one of the housekeepers who presumably was in the room to clean it and noticed all the weaponry. And that was the individual who got the alert individual who got the ball rolling about what's going on here? What could this possibly be about? So we may learn more about some other explanation. None of it would be, I think, I don't know that there any explanation would be soothing, but whether this was indeed intended as part of some kind of a plot to wreak havoc during the All-Star Game festivities is an open question and certainly has to be considered given the circumstances. Law enforcement still playing it pretty close to the vest beyond information on what they seized about intent. I don't know if they're going to get, if we'll get more information on that as the days go on. But a rather troubling story. Hotel guest is quoted here as saying he and other guests received a phone call telling them to remain in their rooms as police conducted the investigation. They were told that a maid had discovered the weapons in the hotel, then alerted authorities as well. And just laid out the arrest information. It certainly sounds like some pretty serious weaponry there as well. And I think it's one of those concerns now that's lurking for everybody, waiting for, unfortunately, the possibility of something like this happening again. Hopefully that will not be the case, but I think there's always that built-in concern given the amount of ammo and the craziness that seems to be emanating out there pretty much across the board. 800-320-5326, toll-free, 651-989-5326 as well. Either of those phone numbers will work very quickly before we get to a couple of calls. I want to mention another thing that is kind of, I wouldn't say it's keeping me up at night, but is concerning. And it has to do with Coach of the Year awards, any of these awards, MVP awards, Coach of the Year awards, Player of the Year awards, whatever you want to call them. And it seems as if with every year that goes by, we're getting stupider about them, getting dumber about them. Because now there's a lot of people who have observed the Phoenix Suns run and even have observed there's been some viral video of a couple of sideline situations during timeouts in which Monty Williams, the Phoenix Suns head coach, seems to be doing what we like to think coaching, good coaching, is all about. And as a result of those things, there's this sort of hue and cry of, how in the world is Monty Williams, how did he not win Coach of the Year? How did Tom Thibodeau, whose team immediately flamed out in the first round of the playoffs, how is he Coach of the Year? And then I'm forced at that point to say, how stupid are you? Seriously, how dumb are you? For better or for worse, the NBA Coach of the Year is based on regular season performance. This isn't difficult. This isn't complicated. This is not Rhodes Scholar material. If you want to change the awards and you want to make it on the basis of regular and postseason, go ahead. I wouldn't be, these awards kind of bore me, but for people who are into these things, change the rules on it. But whoever voted, when they voted, they didn't know the run the Phoenix Suns were going to go on. It hadn't happened yet. So stop obsessing over, and by the way, it could be Tibbs, it could be anybody, it doesn't really matter. But it's based on, I think with some logic, what takes place during an 82, or in this case, I think it was a 72-game regular season. Not complicated. Yet we have people who are just shaking their heads and saying, this just doesn't make any sense. Believe me, Monty Williams is getting his due. I doubt he's on the verge. He needs two victories to win an NBA title. I doubt he's going to be all that devastated if he doesn't get a regular season award, because he probably understands the regular season award. And maybe on the basis of even the regular season, there are people who would say he should have been the guy. I would say it's apples and oranges. Monty Williams has done a really nice job, but they had some talent. And they added, of course, Chris Paul. New York Knicks were considered one of the least talented teams, can still consider one of the least talented teams in basketball. From what, third worst record, fourth worst record, to, was it top four finish? I think they were four. I think they were a four seed in the Eastern Conference playoffs. Now, they were awful against Atlanta once they got there, although it turns out Atlanta's a pretty damn good team. So I don't think anybody has to apologize for voting for Tibbs on the basis of how the regular season played out and the expectations for that team, the talent on that team. I mentioned that Tibbs is so hated that as if indeed the Knicks fade quickly in the postseason, he will be blamed for all of that, and very quickly it will be forgotten that the notion they were even in the position they were made no sense. What, look at their roster. Look at the players they're throwing out there. But we can have that argument. But to pretend that what happens in this case now, July, should have any impact on an award in which the votes must be tabulated and sent in before, certainly by the end of the regular season, is kind of dumb. And that's exactly what some people these days seem to be debating. Let's get one more break in, and then we got a call about MLB pace of play, which we'll get to, and we can take a few other calls as well. 800-320-5326, 651-989-5326. It's now official. No cake show today. Guardsy's still out, so we'll go syndication, I'm assuming, for the rest of the day. Guardsy expected back tomorrow for a very emotional reunion.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
On the Fan.
In a phone call and try to get to one other item before we wrap things up at 11 o'clock today. Sam wants to get into the pace of play question as it pertains to Major League Baseball. Sam, thanks for holding. Calling from Savage. Go ahead.
Hey, Dan. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Good. So, you know, one caveat I want to add to the whole pace of play thing is definitely professional baseball, because you only need to look to college baseball to see that baseball can be played and be played at a pace and have, you know, not take any of the excitement out of it. But they just get to their business. Pitchers pitch. The batter doesn't step out and Garcia para the bit. And it has more energy. It has more, you know, it's just more fun to watch. And, you know, I watched as much as I could of the College World Series recently this past month. But I may watch baseball when it gets to the playoffs. But, you know, an average day in, day out Twins game, it's like, no thanks. I don't want to invest that much time. And it's just frankly boring to watch.
Thank you for the phone call. And it's an interesting thought, because I had an email from longtime listener Steve River Falls, writing in anticipation of perhaps this discussion. Said, if your upcoming rant about MLB has to do with pace of play problems, I thought you should know these problems do not exist here at town ball level. The team I work with has just come off 2 9-inning games completed in just a little over 2 hours each, both entertaining hometown team victories complete with stolen bases, lots of base hits and doubles, a triple, very well executed hit and run, add in even a couple of home runs. I invite everyone to come watch the River Falls fighting FUSH today at 1 p.m. as we play the Plum City Blues, or on Saturday you can come see MLB Hall of Famer Dave Winfield as we dedicate our new turf that was donated by the MLB Players Association through a grant Winfield helped arrange. So he's pretty much saying the same thing you just heard from this last caller. At other levels, it seems as if the sort of built-in internal clocks seem to work better. And again, I get it. There's a lot of people who are only going to be interested in baseball played at the highest level in terms of talent. They want to see major league talent. No offense to town ball, no offense to college, no offense to every other level, little league. But there is something to the lesson that there is no real legit reason that even with the best talent, you can't merge the respect that seems to be shown to the game regarding speed at all the other levels, and ask that much of your best players to do exactly that, your major league players. It's not difficult to figure out. You don't have to watch much baseball to see why, at least on that level, we're in the position we're in. Hey, and by the way, maybe you put in a pitch clock and you adhere to it, and maybe nothing changes about the popularity index of Major League Baseball. I'm not ruling out that possibility, but I'm saying it's worth a shot, and it's really, to me, the last thing that you want to find out before you just sort of give up on the game. Because it would be, I think there'd be a lot of regret if the game starts fading or continues to fade more and more into sort of second-class level, and you go, well, what if we had, in, you know, 2020 or 2021, really gotten tougher, gotten the players together with management and said, we got to fix this. And so that everybody feels invested in the fix and tried it, who knows? Maybe we would be in a better position. Maybe the game would be in better shape, but we'll never know because we never really gave it an honest chance to get done. One item outside the toy department, which we tend to emphasize here on sermons, but I had teased during the pregame Twitter tweet on this issue, and also early in the show that I wanted to get to it. I am looking at I'd asked Brianne early whether she was Gen Z, which she says she's not. I clearly am not Gen Z either. And I'm looking at a story that was brought to my attention actually by Dan Abrams, who was just on the show the other day, big time ABC legal analyst, pretty well known name. And the headline of the New York Times story reads, "Could Gen Z free the world from email?" And what it lays out is apparently a belief, of, especially among Gen Z members, but not exclusively, that email has become too much of a stressor in their lives. They quote a guy named Simmons, who says he prefers, he apparently started his own video production company and tends to communicate with his 8 employees and clients over text, Instagram messages, and Zoom calls. "Email is all your stressors in one area, which makes the burnout thing so much harder," he said. "You look at your email and have work stuff, which is the priority, and then rent's due from your landlord, and then Netflix bills. I think that's a really negative way to live your life." He cites as an example of his stress and frustration a work email from the Seattle Mariners that ended up getting lost in his spam folder. They quote other people also saying that email on the worst days have brought me to tears. Others saying that it's the eternal chore. Another person, "Every time I get an email, it's like getting stabbed. Another thing for me to do." Some people unhappy about the sense of guilt they have for not being able to reply faster or for adding emails to their colleagues' inboxes. Others describing how responding to a barrage of emails caused them to lose track of other tasks, creating a cycle that's at best unproductive and at worst infuriating. At which point in the story, I'm shaking my head and I'm saying, what's wrong with people? Are you 7 years old? You 11? Are you serious? As Abrams writes, they prefer, the Gen Z folks apparently, other less formal communication. Okay, but this is about working at a job, when they get paid for working, or where they get paid for working. And yes, sending emails can be work. It's confounding. Now, maybe the New York Times has invented an angle here and is embellishing on it and exaggerating it more than there's real fear and loathing.
But they'd never do that.
But if there is fear and loathing, I hate to say it, but that's kind of part of life. And what I loved were some of the comments. I usually hate Twitter comments in reaction to some of these stories. Some of these are precious. "Can you imagine? There are no words to describe how much I wish email was my biggest problem, and also how annoyed I am by those for whom it is. I'm a nurse who works outpatient, non-clinical, in that I don't see patients at bedside, but I care coordinate, which is very time consuming, by the way. Multiple medical disciplines. I get tugged, by the way, my computer assignments, view alerts to my charts, etc., etc." But her point is that the emails, all this data is time sensitive, patient related, needs prompt attention. Her point is, if there's other ways for you to be accessible or to get the work done besides email, go for it. But whatever you want to call it by whatever name you want to. And in the story, they mention, iMessage. Some people like iMessage better. But I'm sure there are people who would say, I'm just get worn down by all the messages I get from people, the texts I get from people. My God. It's all part of growing up and being an adult. I hate to say it. It just is. And that doesn't mean it isn't stressful, but I would say you're not going to be able to eliminate all aspects of stress in your life. If you want to function, if you want to be an adult, if you want to have a job. Now, it's important to try to use your best, I'll use the catch terms or the buzzwords. Coping mechanisms, I'm fine with that. I mean, we all get stressed by different things, and if we find things that help us combat that or ease that, I don't think you ever have to apologize for that. But the fact that you can eliminate that, what if my boss wants to get a hold of me? Well, that's your boss. Now, if you have a boss who's harassing you or is over the top and constantly trying to get in touch with you, that's not good, but that doesn't have to be just a function of email. That could be phone calls. That could be other things. In fact, there's somebody in here in these responses who basically mentions that if they would much prefer, they don't like people enough to want to have, constant sort of, phone calls instead. They prefer the arm's length approach where they stay in communication, they stay aware, but they don't have to worry about it turning into a Wagnerian opera of a conversation, right? It's like, okay, here's the email, here's what you need to know, here's what's coming next, here's what I need you to find out about, and then you move on to the next thing. So the idea that somehow the email as a concept is the root of all evil, as opposed to any other form of communication, is stupid. The idea that email is the only form of communication that can be over the top, occasionally obnoxious, annoying, and perish the thought. None of us have ever had an email that went to spam that shouldn't have. Have you ever had that happen to you?
Of course.
Did you survive it?
Yes.
You found a way to figure it out and cope with it and put out whatever fire might have been associated with the email ending up in the wrong place.
I somehow did. I love email. I don't get this at all. Frankly, I love the multiple forms of communication. Sometimes with my multiple bosses, I will have a text message and then an email, and I like email for the record of things, frankly.
I don't disagree with that. Am I good enough at sort of cleaning out my emails? No. Does that get daunting sometimes when I look at how many I have in there and I haven't figured out how do I get rid of a bunch of them all at the same time? Yeah, all that stuff is true, but it doesn't make me toss and turn to the point same. Where I'm obsessed over it or I lose my mind over it. And this to me falls into the category of one of those stories that maybe you just do because you need to fill copy and just like we need to fill airtime, and you end up, it's either that you're making it seem as if it's a bigger problem to people than it is because otherwise you don't really have much of a story, or it's you got some people who are being enabled by stories like this to say, yeah, I've come to a complete standstill because I can't handle the thought of getting online and checking my email and seeing that there's 22 new emails and a bunch of them I'm not even asking for. At some point, you either involve yourself in the culture at large and society, or you don't. And if you want to tune out and you get away with it, God bless you. I understand people who want to do that. And some people have the means to do it and are at the point of their lives that they could do it. But in a lot of jobs, in most jobs, you're not going to be able to do it. It's okay. It's not the end of the world if you don't get to every email. And again, it's all about if you have forms of communication you like better, that's fine if that can be workable. But let's be honest, in a lot of companies, that's not workable all the time, right? Because everybody's in a hurry. Everybody wants to get stuff done quickly. And the story, the level of whining in this particular story, stunning. It's in the New York Times today. I want to see if I can find a couple more of the responses, because there were some really good ones in here that I was unable to get to first time around, and I lost the deal. Here we go. That's not it.
Well, part of being a good adult is having good boundaries for yourself, and I'll tell you, a quick fix, if you're getting overwhelmed by email, I just hit X, take a break, come back to it later.
Yeah,
it's going to be there.
You can do that too, right? I mean, that's not that impossible to do. We've all had our days where if you go on vacation, you're gone a while and then you get back online and let's see, for work emails, and suddenly you got to go through that. It's not fun, but again, it's if you're spending your life expecting for people that somebody is going to have this magic formula to take the drudgery away or some of the tougher things away, I'm going, man, you got to grow up. That's just not how real life works. What you have to do is find again ways to cope with it to make it perhaps easier for you to not be overwhelmed by it, because we all get overwhelmed by stuff, right? I don't doubt that, but I just, the story is, and it just goes on and on and on. Because if you're doing, now look, for a lot of people, and we're going to get, there's another really good story on this subject I want to get into early in the week regarding loneliness. But it's unrelated to this. But if you're somebody who, I like the personal touch better, I don't think anybody should have a problem with that. And you, so you work that to your strengths. It's just that sometimes that might not be possible, right? Given the size of the company, given the number of people that that person or persons might have to deal with. And even for a lot of people, it's actually more daunting to have and more pressure filled to feel like, oh God, we're here we go. We're going to talk about this. What else are we going to, you know, what else are we going to talk about here? That sort of thing. For some people, that can be stressful. So I guess to me, the moral is to pretend that you can eliminate this stuff completely just because it's stressful means you got work to do for yourself or on yourself. And because you're not ever going to eliminate points of stress, you want to try to ease them. You want to try to play to your strengths is the way I would look at it. But the idea that you're losing your mind, like you can't go on because your email, you haven't checked your email box and you're worried about what might be there or what you might miss, that does not make a lot of sense to me. If they communicate the same information, the job gets done, does it really matter what form of communication you use, is the way another person put it. Like before email, would you have said, why didn't you write a letter and have it take a week to get done? Now we look too productive and competent. Problem now is anything other than getting a check for sitting home and doing nothing is too stressful and anxiety-inducing for many. Communication by social media and text, I'm so happily a boomer. There's lots of ways to communicate. I'm not against any of them necessarily. What I am against is this woe is me sort of don't blame me for being unable to respond to this or to cope with this, because the great irony of this thing is, at least in theory, the belief is that email is a far more convenient form of communication than having to sit down to write a letter, right?
I was just going to say that. I mean, go back to those days. I can't imagine how stressful that would be, trying to get an answer from a boss.
Exactly right. And the same people who are whining about this form of communication were the ones who previously were whining, oh, I got to write another letter. That's going to take forever. You want to talk about coping? You want to talk about stress? You want to talk about taking more time out of your day? It's bizarre. Emailer guy Matt, I work in purchasing. I love emails. Very few phone calls. I dread having to chit-chat over nonsense with certain vendors. Emails, easy, and everything can be tracked. Yeah, I mean, that's it. If you're somebody who doesn't need the personal touch, you love emails. You say it's not the root of all evil. If you need the more personal touch, find ways to do it as well. But any form of communication can be overwhelming.
Absolutely. I can't imagine having your personal phone being inundated with work texts and things
exactly
like
right.
that. I try and kind of separate the two. That's what email's for.
They're into instant gratification, want immediate answers, don't want to wait for the reply. I'm not Gen Z, however, I think there's not a lot of appropriate work etiquette when it comes to what is a phone call versus email and modality and timeliness of response. I don't even know what that means, but it's got a lot of good buzzwords in it. That's why it's called work, says one woman. You have to do things that aren't fun. Otherwise, it would be called fun. Exactly. It's not great. Nobody looks forward to it necessarily. But stop feeling you're sorry for yourself because you have problems dealing with. I can't even imagine. I'm going to go to a shrink. There's a lot of good reasons to go to the shrink. I'm not sure this is one of them. I wouldn't think. It wouldn't be near the top of my list. We'll get maybe some email response, or I'm going to save some email responses and get to it tomorrow. We plan to be all over this Vixen story now that we are in the championship game. It'll be played 2 weeks from yesterday, and maybe even include a couple of guests to help us prepare for the showdown game. And we learned that the team we're going to have to beat, not only is the defending champion, they're the two-time defending champion. They've won it the last two postseasons. And that would be the Boston Renegades. I don't think Tom Brady has anything to do with that team at this point. But we'll see if we get more information on them as well. I haven't got an email from the coach of our club, the Vixens. So we'll make that part of our discussion over the course of the next week or two. Breanne, thanks for your help as always today.
Good to see you.
No cake show today. That, I'm assuming, is coming back next week. Gardzi wrapping up a vacation. He should be back on Bumper to Bumper tomorrow beginning at 3. Among our guests, the return of Johnny Athletic. His last Monday was a best of day. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday, the rest of your weekend. We will talk to you tomorrow beginning at 3 o'clock here in the Fan.